another bitter presidential election, another unpopular war. I'm not talking about now, I'm talking about four decades ago. This week, Hearing Voices from NPR brings you back to 1968. I'm Barrett Golding of Hearing Voices, supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. In a minute, we'll hear some voices from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, 1968, a year that didn't start well. The Tet Offensive began January 31st, Vietnam's New Year's Day. From the Pacifica Radio Archives, here's reporter Dale Miner.
I returned last night from the small wedge of windswept and shell-churned red clay called Quezon, where 5,000 Marines, with an additional complement of Arvin Rangers, dig in under constant artillery, rocket, and mortar fire, against the day possibly only hours away, when the long-awaited big crunch begins. Constant is probably too strong a term for the present North Vietnamese artillery harassment of the Quezon base. Intermittent would be more accurate. But it is constant in the sense that it's always there. A walk down the road from one bunker to another is as likely to be made with a detour into a trench as not, as a not-so-distant boom warns one of an approaching round, or the crack and zing of a sniper's bullet reminds one that not only is the base in its entirety under direct NVA observation, but every yard of it is in small arms range of North Vietnamese troops who daily draw their ring tighter about it.
1967 had the summer of love. 1968 was a summer of hate.
I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
I'm only going to talk to you just for a minute or so this evening because I have some very sad news for all of you, and I think sad news for all of our fellow citizens and people who love peace all over the world. And that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis, Tennessee.
My brother need not be idealized or enlarged in death beyond what he was in life. To be remembered simply as a good and decent man who saw wrong and tried to right it, saw suffering and tried to heal it, saw war and tried to stop it. Those of us who loved him and who take him to his rest today pray that what he was to us, what he wished for others, will someday come to pass for all the world. As he said many times in many parts of this nation, to those he touched and who sought to touch him, some men see things as they are and say, why? I dream things that never were and say, why not?
The confrontation was not created by the police. The confrontation was created by the people who charged the police. Gentlemen, get the thing straight once and for all. The policeman isn't there to create disorder. The policeman is there to preserve disorder.
Fighting soldiers from the sky. Fearless men who jump and die.
The people in the back are being beaten. I can hear the crack on the head, and they're falling.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware.
They're hiding!
one cop picked up a demonstrator and tossed him into the down the steps of the subway.
Hey, you pig! Madman!
Yeah. There goes the gas. Oh.
Get him up!
They're charging into it. They're charging into it. Press.
Get out of here. Get out.
Wisconsin!
Mr. Chairman, most delegates to this convention do not know that thousands of young people are being beaten in the streets of Chicago.
I can see them shooting gas through the flamethrower. Yes, gas is being used over there. It's being shot into the crowd. My God, it's strong. It's kind of a yellow smoke. Gotta get out of here. There goes a big blast of tear gas right into the crowd. The crowd is trying to retreat. I can't see. I gotta get out of here. I can't cover this story anymore. Gas is too strong. I can't see. I'm going to get farther away. The hell with this story. Goodbye. He got me in the face. Oh, man.
Just hang on. Don't rub it, man. It makes it worse. You rub it in.
What do I do?
You just leave it until we get you some water, and then you wash it off. We'll have water at the gas station over here.
I can't see. Where am I?
I'm hanging on to me, and I can see fine.
Being wrong, nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
You are hearing voices, specifically voices from 1968. Speeches, songs, and the Staples Singers.
What a beautiful year. Thousand people in the street. Playing song and carrying signs. Boys be saying, hooray for our side. It's time to stop. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
Ask me my opinion will be. dumb, a wondering, a working so hard.
This medley is by producer Peter Beauchamp. Forty years ago, a book came out called The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test by Tom Wolfe. It was about Ken Kesey and his band of merry pranksters. Recently, two of the pranksters talked with producers Ann Hepperman and Kara Oley.
So, I want to take some LSD. I want Babs to take some. Cassidy, you want to take some?
I would, yes, I
would. I'm Carolyn Garcia. I was also known as Mountain Girl back in the days when we were doing the acid test. That was my nickname.
I am Intrepid Traveler, and these are my merry band of...
We all had nicknames.
They called me Hardly Visible.
George Walker's nickname was Hardly Visible.
Our last tribute to George Walker.
It was something that was kind of a sarcastic name. One time when we took acid, I was seeing all these bright colors.
I delved
into a pile of clothes and put on all the bright colored things that I could find. Came walking into the room at Kesey's house in La Honda, and Hagen saw me with all this stuff on and says something like, "Holy smokes, it's hardly visible." I looked like an acid apparition walking through the room.
I got my prankster name, Mountain Girl, one day at a party when I was just getting to know the rest of the prankster crew.
Somebody asked her, "Well, where do you live?" And she says, "Up there on the mountain."
And they said, "Well, then you must be Mountain Girl." And then they laughed hysterically, and I've been stuck with it ever since.
A lot of us were living at Kesey's in La Honda, which is south of San Francisco and kind of in the coastal hills.
The pranksters usually had parties on Saturday, and that was when people could come out from Berkeley or come over the hill from Palo Alto.
And it was kind of like a psychedelic show and tell. People would get high and just kind of do little skits and stuff.
Bum, 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 bum. I'm coming to you from communications.
And sort of join in the fun, and we would set up the sound system and some movies out in the woods.
Well, you're making a movie. Oh,
yeah. Some of it was musical, some of it was just silliness.
The toilet! No, certainly not in here.
They were well attended by a lot of Ken Kesey's friends, and they started to grow and get bigger.
Rock all around, rock all around. Rock.
It just kind of happened as we went along. We realized that there was something about the way we were relating to ourselves and the rest of the world that was a little different.
What is happening down there?
Well, we're being assailed by a swarm of joints.
We were colorful, we were fun, we were athletic. To us, this was an American tradition. We believe in the pursuit of life and liberty and happiness. We felt like we'd discovered a certain kind of magic, and this was a magic that needed to be shared.
We had slogans.
A vote for Barry is a vote for fun.
Never trust a prankster.
A vote for Barry is a vote for fun.
And it wasn't like we were going to burn you or do you bad, but we would try to have an effect on people that would bend their mind in some way.
We are actually fourth-dimensional beings in a third-dimensional body inhabiting a second-dimensional world.
You know, we tried to get people out of their ordinary ideas and train of thought, and so you know, you can't trust us to react the way somebody else might react.
Switch.
The Merry Pranksters, we had the bus.
Here indeed is a picture of the buses that first came into La Honda.
And grinning off in the distance, Ken Kesey himself, the purchaser of the 1939 International Harvester.
You know, later there were lots and lots of buses, and there's still lots of buses, you know, hippies and buses all painted up and stuff. But we were the first one, and nobody had ever seen anything like that before. What it looked like was, as much as possible visually, was kind of like an acid trip, kind of chaotic mix of bright colors everywhere, and I think that was a lot of what motivated us to paint it like it did, like we did.
Right over the door of the bus, there was a little hand-painted sign that said, "Nothing lasts."
Nothing lasts, which came out of always losing stuff or breaking things.
And that was Ken's personal mantra.
Everything is transitory. There's nothing that is fixed in the world or in the universe. Everything is changing. Everything is constantly in a state of flux.
I certainly remember the first time I took any LSD. They gave me a little bit, and I was so intrigued by the way everything looked. And it seemed like all the redwood needles on the ground kept rearranging themselves into interesting and sort of informative patterns, like they were trying to tell me something. And I could feel the presence of the trees, but it was fascinating, and I wanted more.
Hello there, we've been waiting for you. It's me, friends, the old pointed head.
As the scene at Kesey's just kept getting bigger and bigger, he realized this is too easy to spot. We need to get this thing out of my house or we're all going to end up seriously in trouble. And so he said, let's go rent places and do it somewhere else. And he came up with the term, the acid test.
Tonight's acid test will remain embarked on its perilous voyage the remainder of the night.
Everywhere you are, you're all acid testing and acid tasting.
We put up posters that said, "Can you pass the acid test?"
Wow, this is some potion that this young lady has given me. It feels pretty good.
Before LSD became illegal, we would give people a dose of acid when they came in.
They were really meant to be a safe place to get high.
And it was kind of a test to see, you know, how well people could function in this situation. Right off, we connected with the Grateful Dead so that we had music, people would dance and stuff.
There was no barrier between the audience and the participants. Audience and the performance was one. And we would set up a strobe light. We'd have boxes of instruments that people could play, and there'd be live microphones sort of spotted around the room.
These three microphones don't seem to be working.
We also realized that this was revolutionary work because we were introducing people to a set and setting that really hadn't been done before. We wanted to sell this concept that your brain can do a lot of things that you didn't know it could do.
When we set out to do the acid test, you know, we were hoping that it would be big enough that we could, you know, maybe make a few bucks and, you know, support ourselves for a while with it. And who knows, maybe even achieve a modest amount of fame. But I don't think I ever had a notion of what a huge phenomenon it would become.
The immense popularity of the psychedelic movement did take us by surprise. We didn't really know that it was going to be such a gigantic ripple effect. And when the Beatles came out with Magical Mystery Tour, we cheered. All of that stuff is just, it's delightful because it was so different. This is what it was that LSD brought you to, and brought artists and writers and musicians to, was enhanced creativity.
I think a lot of what solidified our position in it was Tom Wolfe's book, The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test.
And the acid test will be us everywhere.
Everywhere.
That really put us into the mainstream of consciousness, if not the mainstream of culture.
I think that the acid tests were really a deliberate attempt to move consciousness expansion out into the public marketplace of ideas. We wanted to sell this concept that your brain can do a lot of things that you didn't know it could do. America needs the antic spirit that the merry pranksters embody. I think that the spirit of play and of fun is both, it's anti-war, it's anti-establishment. We need to keep our creativity. We need to keep our personal freedoms. They're precious.
We've lost all power.
Thank you for your cooperation.
Everybody enjoyed it, sir.
Thank you for listening. Without your clarity.
Carolyn Garcia and George Walker, a.k.a. Mountain Girl and Hardly Visible, of Ken Kesey's Merry Pranksters. That was produced by Ann Hepperman and Kara Olof for their series This Weekend in 1968 for the show Weekend America. And that Tet Offensive report was from the Revolution Rewind Project at PacificaRadioArchives.org. Coming up, more war and peace, more love and hate from 1968. That's in a minute on Hearing Voices.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
Welcome back to Hearing Voices. This next half hour is a mix by producer Peter Beauchamp of some things you might have heard on the radio, on TV, in the movies back in 1968.
In these troubled times, besieged as we are on all fronts.
This is 1968, dearies, not 1948.
1968!
What have you got?
1968.
May I have?
Beginning of 1968. General Westmoreland needed 206,000 more troops. We met hour after hour after hour in the Pentagon, and I started in and asked the Joint Chiefs of Staff, how long do you
so
think...
So as the war hawks escalate the war in Vietnam, we must escalate our protest against the war. The aim is to build the powerful peace bloc that can really have influence in the 1968 election.
I think they should be with fish. And that way they could only prey on fish.
The commentary by Students for a Democratic Society was not available for broadcast this morning. It's time now for the war summary.
Make no mistake about it. I don't want a man in here to go back home thinking otherwise. We are going to win.
The planes again. Are they American or Vietnamese?
I don't know whose they are. Just airplanes.
Coming up in 90 seconds. Mark, T-minus 90 seconds and counting. The Apollo 8 crew standing by. Spacecraft Commander Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, Bill Anders. As we come up on the 60-second mark on a flight to the moon.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, sir.
Plastics.
The 35th Quadrennial Convention of the Democratic Party of the United States is now called in session.
It's for throwing out the opening pitch.
God didn't call America to do what she's doing in the world now. God didn't call America to engage in a senseless, unjust war as the war in Vietnam. And we are criminals in that war. We've committed more war crimes almost than any nation in the world. And I'm going to continue to say it.
I run to seek new policies. Policies to end the bloodshed in Vietnam and in our cities. Policies to close the gaps that now exist between black and white, between rich and poor, between young and old, in this country and around the rest of the world.
We have here a bulletin which has just been handed to me by the press from Czechoslovakia.
We built the country up, we'll burn it down. You can quote that.
Once upon a time, there was a tavern.
Don't be afraid. Don't be ashamed. We want black power. We want black power.
It's free and it's on the inside. Just a little bit closer. Let me have your attention. This is the one you've heard about. This is the free one. This is the one that doesn't cost you a cent.
This time we're going to win.
Hey, kids, these are the cars with the lucky numbers. These cars are being given away free. Free car with the winning ticket. Free, free. These cars that sell for over $3,000 are yours free if you hold the winning ticket. Free, free.
Free, free, free.
Free, free.
All right, folks, step right up. I want to talk to the kiddies, the youngsters in the crowd. Let the little ones through.
Sock it to me.
Politics of happiness.
Hey, kids, get your lifetime psychedelic dance lessons. The Froo, the Watusi, the Boogaloo.
Uh-oh, I'm sorry. Lifetime psychedelic dance lessons.
Work out, baby.
We must psychedelicize their impoverished dreams. Teach them how to live again. Make them stop playing the ego game. Teach them how to die so that they can be born again, so that they can become a flower again.
Let me have a cigarette, please.
No.
I'm giving you $12
tickets. You're one of these guys who does that all the time. You never have cigarettes of your own.
I will have one of my own from your factory. Trade you. One Poor People's Campaign 1968 badge for a cigarette.
You can't fool me, man. I know there's a whole box of about 1,000 of those Poor People's Campaign buttons over there.
Two.
No, I can go over and get 500 and tell them I want.
Not anymore, you can't.
You have to do better than that, Marshall. I might consider it for your I Am an American button.
Whoa.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lay on me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, how do you
know?
All I need is my brother.
I
say I'm gonna get high. Tell don't it say it no more.
Joe Cocker doing the Beatles.
Gonna get down and I'm praying.
You are listening to Hearing Voices, and we're presenting a mix of songs and speeches from 40 years ago.
Keep on getting high.
It's funny how, like they say, the song remains the same.
There are those who ask why this responsibility should be ours. The answer, I think, is simple. There's no one else who can do the job.
When the Second World War was over, we were the one great power in the world. The Soviets had a substantial military machine, but they could not touch us in power. We had this enormous force that had been built up. We had the greatest fleet in the world. We'd come through the war economically sound, and I think that in addition to feeling a sense of responsibility, we also began to feel the sense of a world power that possibly we could control the future of the world.
It might sound cliché-ish to say that my country may always be right, but right or wrong my country. But that's how I felt.
Awful sick of here. I'll be so glad to go home. I don't know. It's the worst area we've been in since I've been in Vietnam.
You think it's worth it?
Yeah, I don't know. They say we're fighting for something. I don't know.
We are all so proud of you.
Proud.
What are you going to do now?
I was going to go upstairs for a minute.
Oh, I meant with your future.
Your life.
Well, that's a little hard to say.
Instead of helping and aiding the Vietnamese people, I saw that we were party to their deliberate and systematic destruction. The Vietnamese were considered less than humans, inferiors. We called them gooks, slopes. Their lives weren't worth anything to us because we've been taught to believe that they were all fanatical and that they were all VC or VC sympathizers, even the children.
His culture is our culture.
Of course, the name for a conflict in which you're opposing a revolution is counter-revolution. And this was something we never admitted to ourselves at all. It's what we were really doing.
I still say you're making a mistake.
That's the spirit. Keep them flying.
What?
The flags of discontent. Remember, never trust anybody over 30.
Certainly a mature person can say they made a mistake. Why can't a government?
We are all, by any practical definition of the words, foolproof and incapable of error.
You know, you let us all go off to war and said, yay, team, you know, fighting Vietnam 1965 through 1968. Now 1968 comes along and, boo, team, come on home. You know, and don't say nothing about it because we don't want to hear about it because, you know, it's upsetting around dinner time, you know. Well, it upset me, you know, for a whole year. It upset a lot of people to the point where they're dead, you know, and all this.
We don't want no more war!
The country is ready to pass a reasoned judgment on this war. People have judged, I think, that it's unwise and immoral and not in the national interest of this country, and that therefore it must be brought to an end.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Say the joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Plowman.
I do not believe
that I should devote an hour or a day of my time to any personal partisan causes. Accordingly, I shall not seek the nomination of my party for another term as your president.
No reason to get excited.
Got some difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Gentlemen, I'm only going to talk to you just for a minute or so this evening because I have some very sad news for all of you, and I think sad news for all of our fellow citizens and people who love peace all over the world. And that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis, Tennessee.
Here is the 7:25 edition of the local news brought to you in color. The killing of Dr. Martin Luther King in Memphis has brought shock, grief, anger, and violence in the New York area as well as many other parts of the country. Disorders broke out last night in Harlem, Bedford-Stuyvesant, East New York, Times Square, the towns of Greenberg in Westchester County, and Monticello in the Catskills, and in Hartford, Connecticut. Groups of stunned, then angry young men formed on the streets of Harlem, first around 125th Street and 7th Avenue, then on many blocks north, south, and east. Their outrage led to window smashing and looting. The youths broke into supermarkets, appliance stores, liquor stores, clothing shops, jewelry stores, and pawn shops.
I plead, if there's ever been a black brother or a sister that's ever heard me and felt that maybe I had something to say, I beg them to hold their emotions in check.
You are hearing this through Hearing Voices from NPR. This week, the voices are all from 1968. This mix is by Peter Beauchamp of WBAI Radio.
You mean
one, no matter where he lives or what he does, can be certain who next will suffer from some senseless act of bloodshed.
I said to him very emphatically and very definitely that an order be issued immediately under his signature to shoot to kill any arsonist, and to issue a police order to shoot to maim or cripple anyone looting any stores in our city.
We say to these leaders, how can you tell black people to be nonviolently and at the same time condone the sending of white killers into the black communities? It's something wrong. We are going to control our communities by any means necessary.
I'm giving all this because I got a feeling I'm going to get it tonight anyway.
My thanks to all of you, and now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there.
Leave your kids behind. Come with us and find the pleasures of the journey to the center of the mind. Come along if you care. Come along if you dare. Take a ride to the land inside of your mind.
Things are being thrown at the police. A bongo drum. The police have just charged into the crowd. They've dragged the young man off a car. They're dragging him away towards the wagon. There are about 20 police on one man. They're dragging him along the ground. He's tumbling over and over and over again. A trash can is being thrown through the rear window of a police car. And now the police are running toward the car. And Larry, get the hell out of here.
Everywhere I hear the sound of marching charge, feed the war. Cause summer's here and the time is right for rising industry, boy. And what can a poor boy do except to sing for a rock and roll band? Cause it's sleeping on downtown, there's just no
Am I under arrest?
Take your hands off me if I'm not under arrest. Hey, think the time is right for violence, revolution.
McGovern as President of the United States, we wouldn't have to have Gestapo tactics in the streets of Chicago.
The confrontation was not created by the police. The confrontation was created by the people who charged the police. Think straight once and for all. The policeman isn't there to create disorder. The policeman is there to preserve disorder.
As Brother Huey P. Newton says, the racist pig cops must stop their wanton murder and brutality or suffer the wrath of the armed black people in their black community defending themselves. Bobby Hutt was instructed by the cops to run from here to the police car or the area where it was, and was literally shot down. He was shot over 10 times.
Those of us who loved him and who take him to his rest today pray that what he was to us, what he wished for others, will someday come to pass for all the world. as he said many times, to those he touched and who sought to touch him.
How can people be so heartless? How can people be so cruel? Easy to be hard, easy to be cold. Oh, how can people have no feelings? How can they ignore their friends? Easy to be proud, easy to say no.
A nomination for the office of President of the United States, the man for 1968, the Honorable Richard M. Nixon.
Strange brew, killing what's inside of you.
I say let's win this one for Ike.
Now, there's another way of working this.
Okay. Wow. You don't have much time.
Say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. You tell me that it's evolution.
Years ago, we still believed we could change the world.
Our aircraft and our naval vessels to make no attacks on North Vietnam.
Here we are. I don't care about the football game now. I don't care about anything now. The one thing that we want to show these bastards with mass and pride. Is that we come down and show them a great mass and effort? And what the piss you doing? What are you doing? Get to them, man! God damn it, Tommy! Don't let them beat us! Don't let them beat us, Mike!
We did stumble upon a strategy where we said, hey, look, if you continue that war in Vietnam, there's going to be chaos here in the streets of the United States.
We want to talk about this thing called violence that everybody is so afraid about.
Here you are talking about you afraid of violence, and the honky's asking you out of school to go fight in Vietnam.
What about the future?
I may just have seen.
Remember what the Great Spirit said?
Every one of them knew that as time went by, they'd get a little bit older.
I have lost. Mr. Nixon has won.
You better think, think about what you're trying to do to me. Think, let your mind go, let yourself be free. Let's go back, let's go way on the way back when.
A shortcut back to 1968, mixed by Peter Beauchamp. His shortcut series are online at prx.org and mixedup.com. I'm Barrett Golding of Hearing Voices. We have a list of all the 1968 speeches and songs you heard in this hour at hearingvoices.com.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darham. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of soundimagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is hearingvoices.com.